I suppose one can only say that every plane is a state of awareness, a state of consciousness, in which everything, 91, about it is real, and you are real with it. In other words, it is one's own particular world, one's own particular form of existence. We know that it will gradually change, and as we change so our surroundings and conditions will change. All the time we are slowly but surely progressing. But the progress is so slow that we just do not realize it. It is rather like on Earth, when you are very young you cannot imagine old age, and indeed while you are living on Earth the progress from childhood seems very slow. Although as you get older time seems to go more quickly, this time business is all an illusion. And, of course, it is impossible for us to analyze these things in that sense because we are not subject to time. No one need ever fear what is yet to come. It is something which you should look forward to and welcome with open arms and be overjoyed to realize that you will be free of all the material worries and all the confusions of the earth. No more will there be the same problems that beset you. You will be in a world where there is every opportunity for progress, and a happy condition among people near and dear to you as well as others who will be of great help and comfort to you. Everything here is harmonious. We live in a world of freedom of speech and freedom of thought, in which we can progress and find true happiness. No one need fear death. It is, indeed, the gateway to life. 92, Chapter 12. The Importance of the Individual. Mickey, hello. Are you doing all your writing? Self, yes, I still keep on. Mickey, I suppose one day you will get it published? Self, posthumously, perhaps. As you once said, Mickey. Mickey, hesitantly, posthumously, what does that mean? Self, you have used the word yourself. Mickey, have I really? I do not remember using that word. I must have heard it, remembered it, and then forgot it. But how will you publish the book when posthumous? Gales of laughter. Are you going to make some arrangements then? Funny you are. Self, laughing, are there many people here today? Mickey, yes. Why? Have you someone special in mind? Self, Douglas, of course. Mickey, oh, he always comes. He's always on your tail, keeping an eye on you to see what you get up to. Have you still got your room? Self, yes, I have. Mickey, no more moving then? Self, not at present. Douglas, hello. Is he teasing you? Self, yes. You have arrived at the right moment. Douglas, Mickey sometimes pretends to be rather ignorant but he is far from that. He is quite a character. I think he makes little jokes just to make people bright and happy and to relieve any tension that might arise. I should not have thought it necessary with you, but he still does it occasionally. Anyway, what do you wish me to talk about? Self, have you discovered another incarnation? I like hearing about your earthly lives. 93 _ Douglas, you seem to place so much store in that. I suppose, in a way, it is very interesting, but it is not so important as it may seem to you. The fact that we have had previous incarnations and have learned a great deal from them is important, but it is not so much in the past that we ought to dwell, as in the future. Self, I fully realize that, yet surely it is part of the romance of life. Douglas, amused. Ah. Now you want to get down to the romance of things. Self, laughing, it intrigues me to know that we have met in other periods of history. Douglas, emphatically, of course we have met in various incarnations, in ancient Egypt, in ancient Rome, in Italy in the Middle Ages, and even in France. I have told you some of these things, but I do not want you to get too involved in reincarnation. I am not suggesting that it has not its place and importance. It has, in one's individual life, it must have. But I think the most important thing from our point of view is making people aware of survival and of the reality of life after death. To me, the most important thing is that people should have the realization and comfort of knowing that life continues after so-called death. The fact that one may return to Earth, and has returned in the past, is important. As I have said before, we are the product of previous incarnations. We are what we are now because of what we have once been. We have gone through many stages of evolution, and achieved, to some extent, a great deal of experience which was necessary, and which could only be gained on Earth. We have molded our personality and our character accordingly. But there may be a tendency among people, when once they become involved in this subject, to become more and more curious about the past. Important though it may well be, it is not as important as that which is to be. After all, it is in the future, in the going forward rather than the looking backward, that we want to progress. Self, yes, of course. Well dear, in our talks we have not touched on the love life of the sexes on the various frequencies of spirit life. Recently, I read that on spheres very near to Earth, men and women make love as on Earth, and even have spirit children. Douglas, I do not know where you have got this from. Quite frankly, I am not aware that people living on spheres near Earth have a sexual relationship, and are able to bring into being children, as such. I know nothing of it, and I cannot imagine it. My experiences have always been of a life which, by its very nature, is purely and wholly spiritual. I have visited conditions of life near to Earth vibrations where there is a much more material conception of life, and in which people certainly do have a life very similar, in certain respects at least, to their material earthly life. But in regard to physical lovemaking, as far as my experience goes, this does not happen. I cannot see any sense in it. By that, I do not mean that people may not be able to love each other. There may be a form of what may seem to be a physical reaction and love, but then again I think that this whole attitude of mind depends so much on the individual. When a person passes from your world to this, it is very unusual if the individual concerned does not become aware of the change. Everything around and about him, and the people he meets, are different, inasmuch as their thoughts are vitally different. In consequence, their reactions and their actions, and the conditions which they create, are such that it would be very difficult for anyone to assume that physical love as it is on Earth could exist, or even be desired. After all, the relationships between people are much deeper. A real relationship, when it is on its highest level, is something which is purely and solely of the mind and of the spirit. The physical aspect of love is a material physical thing which applies on a material physical level such as on Earth, and I cannot conceive of it being necessary or particularly desired over here. Personally, I have never experienced it, and I have no desire to. Real love, as we understand it, is something which is so tremendously powerful. It is from within one's innermost soul. It is marriage, if you like, of mind and spirit between two people here, and everything about it is tremendously exciting, tremendously powerful. But it has not a physical reaction in the sense that it does on Earth. The earthly aspect of marriage is something which must, of course, have its place on Earth. It is vitally important, but it is only a minute part of the reality of love. The reality of love is truly that where two people are so entwined, and so at one in mind and in spirit, that as they rise in the spheres it becomes something far removed from the physical material idea. I do not think there is any comparison between the two. There are souls on Earth who have this deep spiritual love, and they also can have a physical love if it is necessary to them, but, 95, I think that as you get older and as you progress spiritually on Earth, that is if you progress spiritually at all, your emotions and reactions to a person are on quite a different level. You are one in mind and spirit and the physical interest is not the same. You are lifted to the heights by love. Self, do spiritual affinities eventually become one spirit? Douglas, there is a lot of nonsense talked about this twin soul idea. I think every person, because he or she is an individual, has an individual spirit or soul. It is something that they have developed over centuries, not only on Earth but over here of course. But as they go on to much higher thought vibrations and become more evolved, they may become involved, if you like, with another soul of similar type. When two people who on Earth are ideally suited in every sense come here, they will be together. But this does not mean that they will merge, and become one in the sense that some people assume. They still remain individual spirits. They still retain their own outlook and thought and ideas. Although they may have great similarity with each other, they still do not lose identity. They may be, in a way, like two halves joined together forming a perfect whole, but that is in a wider sense, not in a sense of losing one's individuality and personality or one's spiritual shape. It is like the same wine but in different bottles. I know this sounds silly, but it is the only way I can think of at the moment to describe it. They both have reached a certain point of evolution and development, and they both have become spiritualized to a higher degree, but they still retain their own shape and form. If we were to accept the theory that some people have about this union of souls where we become so harmonious together that we lose our shape, then we should become something like the air which everyone must breathe to live by on Earth, for instance. If we were to lose our individuality, we would cease to exist. Self, what is the greater self? Douglas, this is one of those questions which it is extremely difficult to answer. It is very difficult to give a clear-cut view of many things which apply to us and cannot be found in a similar sense on Earth. I wish I knew how to answer it. I think I must try, but it will only be a very vague picturization. When on Earth one must try to realize that we are what we are because of how we are, and how we think. We grow and expand, in our knowledge and experience through time, through varying degrees and conditions of life according to our evolution. We must not anticipate that we shall suddenly become spiritualized beings just because we cease to exist in a physical world and have entered what is loosely termed a spiritual world. I use the term loosely because so many people assume that this world of ours is one world, whereas really, I should imagine that there are millions of different phases of existence, and different conditions and environments. And although they are all, in a sense, of our world, they are on such different strata that one may be on one stratum and know nothing whatsoever about other strata of being, or perhaps only of a very small number. The vastness of life is such that one might say it is like a ladder which you climb rung by rung, and there is no end. You cannot perceive at the bottom what lies in the clouds at the top. It is just as if you were climbing a ladder up a vast skyscraper, and as you are passing different floors you glimpse, as it were, the inhabitants on each floor. For a time, of course, you have to inhabit those different floors and you get to know people, and begin to think as they think, and experience as they experience. You go up gradually, there is no quick lift to take you from the bottom to the top. So many people assume that when they die they will immediately be transported to some heavenly state where everything will be perfect, in which they will become perfect, and where everything will be ruled by some supreme being from some, presumably, gorgeous palace. Man's idea of eternity, his idea of heaven, is such that quite often he has this very materialistic notion, which springs, of course, from early centuries, and particularly from the Middle Ages. A tremendous amount of harm was done to Christianity in the Middle Ages, which still clings. Peculiar things have been added by people whose one intent and purpose, it seems to me, was to hold power. Of course, there were many genuine sincere souls, but many of them built up this weird conception of Christ, and this weird conception of God and of heaven. So many things were brought into being which really do not bear analysis at all. One must realize that all life must, by its very nature, be progressive. It must go from phase to phase. Once life is given, it must go on. After so-called death, the physical body disintegrates and is no more, but the individual, the character, the personality one knew, 97, and loved, the real person which is of the mind and of the spirit goes on. It evolves, and develops, and becomes more and more filled with the Holy Spirit. This Holy Spirit is the essence of life, it is the life-giving force. It is something which is indestructible, and because it is indestructible, because it is eternal in its very concept, it must give life, and make it possible for life to evolve into all manner and conditions of existence far beyond the confines of Earth, far, in fact, beyond the imaginings of man. In a sense, I am unrecognizable to you, because you do not see me or hear me speak except when you come here. Normally, you have not got the vision of the spirit. That does not mean you are lacking in spirituality, but that you are not yet able to overcome the physical difficulties of the body and material life sufficiently to be able to lift yourself above those confines to see with the eyes of the Spirit and to hear with the ears of the Spirit. St. Paul, of course, knew all about this, and if his instructions to the church had been followed out from earliest times to the present, I think Christianity would have progressed much further, and become more powerful from the point of view of the spiritual realization of things. All the clergy and the teachers in the church would have developed their spiritual faculties and powers, they would have been able to do the things that Paul and Christ, and all the other great teachers, had demanded and desired. They would be able to demonstrate the gifts of the Spirit, the gift of tongues, the gift of healing, the gift of prophecy, and so on. All these things are part of the spirit of man who is inhabiting a physical body while upon earth, and he should be able to see, and hear, and do these things. They are natural gifts. Just as man may develop on earth certain faculties as an artist, or as a musician, so he should be in a position to develop his spiritual faculties, and certainly, the church should be teaching and proving these truths by the demonstration of the gifts of the Spirit. Christ came into the world to give to man the realization of the power of God, and to demonstrate the powers of the Holy Spirit, and he said to his disciples, "Go thou and do likewise," and so it is that the church should propagate all this. It is no use a parson getting up in a pulpit and talking about what he has read or studied, that is no use at all. He should be exhibiting the power of the Holy Spirit. That is what the church needs and that is what, 98, it has lacked for centuries. It is here that the salvation of the church lies, in the realization that within man is the power to overcome, and to demonstrate the spiritual power of faculties dormant within him which should, particularly in the church, have been developed. That is the church's failing. It talks and talks, and demonstrates nothing. Until it demonstrates the power of the Holy Spirit, one tongue cannot hope to progress. 99, Chapter 13, The Value of Service. Mickey, hello, Auntie Konaka. Do you want to talk with your husband? Self, yes please, Mickey, if he is here. Mickey, he is here. He knew you were coming. Douglas, quickly joining in the conversation, it would have to be something quite out of my control for me not to come. I love coming to talk to you and I look forward to it. I would be desperately unhappy if I were unable to. After all, you are really the only link I have, and quite frankly I would miss these talks together. I feel I want to do so much from this side to help the world, if it is in my power to do so. The more I see of your world, the more distressed I become, as indeed do we all, because the conditions are so appalling, and they do not improve. They get worse, do not you think so, self? Yes, in some ways, as far as I can judge. Douglas, my goodness me. Whichever way you look there is strife and turmoil, people seem to have this terrible apathy about life, and about things that really matter. There is no stability. No understanding, no brotherhood. Self, well dear, you said you would try to think of a title and give a preface to this little effort of ours. Douglas, a good title, and a good jacket, are the two most important factors. Some of the worst books ever written have been sold by a good title and a good cover. Self, really? Douglas, it is perfectly true. When they are arranged out on the shelves, an attractive cover and a clever title will be one of the most important factors in selling a book. You may have a dozen books that are far more interesting, far better written, far better everything, but the title and the cover are the selling points. 100. Self, well, perhaps you will think about a suitable title. Now tell me some of the things that have delighted you most since you entered the spirit world, nearly 9 years ago. Douglas, coming back to speak to you. Did you hear what I said? Coming back to speak to you is one of the most important things. Self, really? I am so glad. Douglas, you are thinking I am a little facetious this morning. This must strike you as very odd, but in spite of all the intensity that I feel in furthering this truth and bringing it to light so that people may have some understanding of realities, there are moments when I draw nearer to earth, when I feel a little facetious. I know only too well the complications and the difficulties of material life, but there are times when I come back to you and want to tease you a bit. Self, oh do you? Perhaps I take things a little too seriously. Douglas, yes. Sometimes I want to cheer you up and brighten things for you, and let you see that I also have a sense of humor. One of the things that people do not realize is the fact that a sense of humor over here is just as important as it is on your side. Our world is a very real, fundamentally true, world. It is one in which we have many of the better aspects of life that you know of. And, of course, we do have humor, we do have laughter, we do have joy. It is not necessarily a sanctimonious sort of joy. It is not joy in a religious sense either, not in the orthodox sense anyway, thank goodness. One of the biggest things that has happened to me is how I have changed in my outlook, towards life, towards people, and particularly towards orthodox religion. You almost cringe when I start talking about religion. I can feel it, self, so sorry dear, but we have had rather a lot, and some of your views hold things back. Douglas, yes, and it worries you. Do you think that is the biggest stumbling block? Self, I think so. Douglas, that wrong with your think the young tolerant. I think is one thing I do feel. Whatever else may be world, and there is so much that is wrong, I do people are more open, more frank, and more there is more possibility with the young in the coming years than ever there was in our generation. I do not think, 101, they have these narrow views. They are not held back as we were. They are much more forthright. I know there are many aspects of the young which worry one, but I think that they would be much more likely to read and take seriously a book such as ours than the older people. You see, you are having to pander to some extent to older people who are prejudiced and have strong, narrow views. What you need is a young publisher. An active mind, not one who is encased and fenced in, as so many are, by the old thoughts and ideas. Sometimes, unfortunately, one has to attack. One does not like it perhaps, but sometimes to achieve anything one has to break down before one can rebuild. The foundation is solid enough, Jesus, the reality of Jesus, the reality of his teachings, his philosophy, his way of life. All this is real. It is a solid foundation, but it is all the other things which have been added on over the centuries which have obscured truth and have made it difficult to comprehend and understand. Self, after a pause, you were going to tell me about things that delight you about your world. Douglas, freedom to think, and to become, and to be, the realization that love transcends all else, that love makes all things possible, that we live together as one in spirit and in truth. As true brothers, there is a great feeling among all whom I have met over here of desiring for service in the highest sense. There is joy, an ever-living reality, in life here. Every moment, if I can use the term, is important and vital. There is so much to experience in so many different forms and in so many different ways. We see in each other much that is good, and we seek the good in all. And where there are defects, as the well must be, because no world is perfect and no human being is perfect, we strive to assist each other. Souls from higher spheres, coming down as they do to the spheres on which we made well, come with such love and such a perfect understanding, such a desire to be of help. Everything here seems to be in harmony. Harmony prevails. In spite of the differences, as the well must be among many people, differences in temperament, character, outlook, experience, knowledge, or lack of it, still you find there is this perfect oneness, this desire to strive ever upwards towards greater heights and greater realization of what that entails, but never forging ahead without thinking of those less fortunate, striving to help them, and, 102, even sometimes, if you like, temporarily impeding one's own progress. That is the joy of service. I think the Good Samaritan story is a case in point. It is so perfect a story. To me it is the story of us, and of our life here. This ever striving to achieve perfection, the ever going forward on the road of eternal progression, and yet ever being conscious of those walking beside us, those who perhaps seem halting and faltering, those who are stopping by the wayside temporarily, or those who have lost heart. Wherever we may be, and there are many spheres and many conditions of life, we all interweave one with the other both individually and collectively. Here it seems as if there is such perfect unison and harmony, and the desire for absolute giving. It is as if one gives so much and yet one is never conscious of giving, as if one does it automatically, in a natural flow. This is difficult to put into words. The joy and the beauty of life here is because we are all together and yet we are still separate. Self, sometimes you must meet people who on earth were well-known personalities. Douglas, yes, of course, many souls, some who were famous on earth and some indeed who were infamous. But we visit even those who have progressed least and who are on very dark spheres, dark because of the condition of their thoughts and actions, not only on earth, but even over here. People do not suddenly become progressed, they do not suddenly become angels. There are many souls who live in a very darkened world of their own creation. We visit these spheres to encourage, and to help if we can. Sometimes, it is true, we are rebuffed. Sometimes we make little or no progress, as indeed when we come back to earth we feel sometimes we have made little or no progress. But for those who are in the greatest need there are always souls who will try to reach them and help them. Even for those who have sunk very low, there is redemption, there is the possibility for them to climb out of the darkness into the light. No soul is ever lost. There is hope for all. We see life, in some senses, so differently than you do. We see how environment, particularly, plays such an important part in evolution. We realize that people are the products of their time and age, of their society and the condition into which they were born. Many are the victims of their lack of education, or even sometimes, 103, they are the victims of their education. In fact, one might say that those who are less sophisticated or less educated are in some ways nearer to the divine plan than those who are highly evolved materially from the point of view of education and sophistication. So much is brought to bear as a person is developing, particularly in your world. Self, would you agree that some of our sorrows and frustrations come from karma? Douglas, yes, in a sense that is true, but a lot of loose thought and talking has gone on about this business of karma. It depends on what one really means and understands by it. I would not like to suggest, as some people seem to, that certain things are preordained or arranged in regard to a person. If that were so, it would be very unjust, it seems to me. I do not think, for instance, that some divine power called God ordains that a certain soul shall be created under certain conditions and commit certain heinous crimes, etc., because of those circumstances, or because of their lack of development. I do not feel it would ever be right to consider that evils are ordained. I think these are things which must arise, and do arise, and have arisen throughout man's history, brought to bear by his own thought and action. I certainly do not think that everything that is bad is planned or arranged, and that a certain soul should have to do certain things. I do not think any human being's life is ordained or planned. I think it is true to say that in some instances, particularly in incarnations of those who are reborn, people choose to enter into a certain set of conditions, or to be born into certain families, for a definite purpose. Not only because of the challenge, but also because it will give them an opportunity to live in a certain way, and bring them into contact with particular individuals or peoples whom they can best help. A lot of surmising goes on in regard to karma, that things are preordained and so on. If that were so, then it seems to me life would be rather pointless. If everything were planned and organized and, to some extent, one's free will was curtailed, then we would be merely puppets. I do not agree with that. Self, after a pause, have you seen Mother lately? Douglas, I have seen your mother and my mother, and other members of the families and many friends. It must sound very glib to some people when they listen to these recordings, or this subject, 104, is discussed. When people ask, well, are they happy? And we say, oh yes, we are very happy. Of course, we must remember that although what we say is perfectly true, one can never really be fully happy if one is aware of the needs and sufferings of others, often unnecessary suffering that people bring upon themselves. In other words, we are happy, but not selfishly happy, if you can follow what I mean. It is difficult to explain this.